This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa laqad ba'athna fi kulli ummatin rasulan an i'budullaha wajtanibut taghut. فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejectors. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the Israeli regime has launched new airstrikes on the Gaza Strip in violation of the ceasefire agreement with the Hamas movement. Iran's UN ambassador has written a letter to the Security Council saying that the country reserves the right to pursue all legal avenues to hold the U.S. and Israel accountable for the 12-day aggression. And Iran's foreign minister says a prisoner exchange with France has been finalized and will take place soon. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is World News. The Israeli military is pressing ahead with its relentless deadly strikes on the Gaza Strip despite the ceasefire agreement. Israeli warplanes carried out air raids in the southern city of Rafah, causing widespread destruction. In Khan Yunis, heavy artillery targeted residential areas as Israeli forces demolished homes east of the city. The densely populated Al Buraij refugee camp in central Gaza was also shelled. Officials report that Israel has violated the truce over 490 times in just 44 days since the ceasefire was signed. Nearly 350 civilians have been killed since October 11th, and nearly 900 others injured during the same period. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war since October 2023 now stands at around 69,800, with the majority of victims being women and children. Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian young man in the occupied West Bank as the regime ratchets up its violent attacks on Palestinian towns and refugee camps. According to local sources, a 20-year-old Palestinian man was killed after being hit by Israeli gunfire in the town of Babatia, south of the city of Jenin. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the victim as Osama Komail, who died of his wounds after being shot in the abdomen during an Israeli military aggression against the town. The new fatality came after Israeli forces attacked Gabatia, deploying infantry units throughout residential streets and positioning sniper teams on rooftops. The regime's troops opened live fire on multiple areas and raided at least one home. Earlier the same day, Israeli forces launched a major aggression against the Tubas governorate, abducting at least 60 Palestinians in the towns of Araba and Tammun. Nearly a dozen civilians were injured in the attack. Israeli forces also vandalized citizens' property and the main water supply lines. The Israeli regime has launched yet another military operation, this time in the occupied West Bank city of Tubas. The Israeli military leadership has described the operation as preemptive. According to Hebrew media reports, Israeli forces have laid siege to Tubas and its surrounding areas. Our correspondent Tibasi tells us more from the city of Jenin.
Under the pretext of pursuing wanted individuals, Israeli forces, accompanied by the internal spy agency, Shin Bet and police, have launched an operation in the occupied West Bank city of Tubas, bringing the entire region to a standstill. They began raids by closing all entrances to the governorate and imposing a curfew from its northern areas down to the northern Jordan Valley, effectively paralyzing the movement of residents.
Since 4 a.m., Israeli forces have carried out a large-scale incursion across the Tubas governorate, blocking entrances with armored vehicles and roadblocks. Local officials say Israel's claim of targeting armed groups is a pretext to advance its annexation plans, especially after the recent seizure of over 1,000 dunams of land. Emergency teams are responding to residents and coordinating medical evacuations with the Red Cross, while authorities warn the situation is dire and amounts to collective punishment in violation of international law.
Since early Wednesday morning, Israeli forces have stormed the entire Tubas governorate and its surrounding towns. All main entrances in and out of the area have been closed, along with roads leading to agricultural lands. Several families were also forced out of their homes, and their dwellings were turned into military posts. The operation continues, with movement restrictions and harassment.
Israeli forces have been trying to amplify the scene with repeated raids. However, on the ground, indicators suggest There is no real military objective. The operation has only resulted in arrests of civilians, turning homes into military barracks, field interrogations, and attacks on residents.
The soldiers stormed my home without waiting for me to open the door. They damaged house utensils and physically assaulted me. They then arrested my son. In a previous raid, they also turned my home into a military barrack for 10 days.
We received alerts about medical cases in the town of Tamun. At the first checkpoint, we were stopped and prevented from entering. We then had to coordinate so that one ambulance could meet us before the checkpoint and another after it. Because of this delay and the searches, we arrived late to the patients.
The aggression, which Israel claims is a military operation, is seemingly an extension of a process linked to the recent land grab in the northern Jordan Valley. This reflects Israel's intent to isolate the Tubas governorate from the Jordan Valley, with a barrier separating the city from the surrounding area.
The Israeli army launched the wide-scale military operation early on Wednesday in the northern West Bank city of Tubas, carrying out extensive raids and breaking into homes. Residents say Israel's claim of dismantling the so-called armed groups is merely an excuse to justify escalating pressure on Palestinians as these operations continue to expand and tighten control across the West Bank. Tiba Asi, occupied Tubas.
Italy has expelled an Egyptian imam simply for having described the Al-Aqsa flood operation as an act of resistance by the Palestinians. The imam is a man with a clean record who's been living in Italy for the past 20 years. Max Shively reports on that.
A serious attack in Italy and in the rest of the European Union as arrests and expulsions for thought crimes have continued incessantly. Earlier this week, the Italian authorities arrested Mohamed Shaheen for his remarks made last month during a rally in solidarity with the Palestinians when he described the Al-Aqsa flood operation as an act of resistance after years of occupation. Shaheen is an imam from Italy's northern city of Turin, and the Italian government intends to expel him on security grounds.
This affair is seemingly a considerable regression of rights in Italy. However, let's wait until the court makes a decision on the government's expulsion decree. Obviously, the Italian executive is following in the Trump administration's footsteps.
Mohamed Shaheen is a 46-year-old imam of Egyptian nationality with a spotless record. He was arrested on Tuesday for expressing his support to the besieged Palestinians. Shaheen has two kids and has been living in Turin for 20 years. He is currently detained in a repatriation center in faraway Sicily. Shaheen is a dissident cleric who has a record of speaking out against Egyptian authorities, and his life would be at risk if extradited to Egypt, according to his lawyer.
Shaheen has been detained for simply saying that we cannot isolate October 7th from the decades of siege, occupation that preceded it. He's always been against all forms of violence, and now risks losing everything he has if he is transferred to an Egyptian prison. There has been a repressive turn in the Italian government's approach to security following the many protests in solidarity with the Palestinians held in the country.
Islamophobia and the criminalization of the Muslim communities go away and come back in tides in Italy. We are often targeted by national and local governments with ad hoc measures aiming to shut down or increase controls on Islamic centers, although Muslims are very peaceful. The atmosphere has changed over the past years. It's quite gloomy.
Even the recent announcement of the creation of a new Muslim association aspiring to become a political party has caused a stir in Italy. In other EU countries like France and Germany, it is illegal to express views which include some forms of criticism of Israel. Italy is discussing a similar bill presented by the Giorgia Meloni right-wing government in August. Max Civili, Rome.
Iran reiterates that it reserves the right to pursue all legal avenues to hold the U.S. and Israel accountable for the 12-day war on the country. Tehran asserts that it seeks full reparations for damages caused by the acts of aggression. In a letter to the UN Security Council, Iran's ambassador Ami Saidi Ravani said Israel's act of aggression, carried out in coordination with the United States, violated Iran's sovereignty and territorial integrity. He stressed that the strikes constituted a clear breach of the UN Charter targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure. Iravani cited a statement from the U.S. Air Force confirming its involvement in attacks on safeguarded Iranian nuclear facilities. He added that these disclosures, along with remarks by the U.S. President, demonstrate Washington's pivotal role in the war. The envoy emphasized that the United States is obligated to provide full compensation for the material and moral damages suffered by Iran and its citizens. He called on the UN UN Secretary General and the Security Council to bring all of the perpetrators to justice. The Iranian foreign minister says a prisoner exchange with France has been finalized and will take place soon. Abbas Araghchi said negotiations for the swap are fully complete, with both sides now awaiting the completion of judicial processes. Speaking to France 24 in Paris, he indicated that the exchange could occur within the next 1 to 2 months. Araghchi confirmed that Iran's Supreme National Security Council has approved the exchange and that Tehran is fully prepared. He and his French counterpart met in Paris on Wednesday to discuss the swap. The exchange involves Iranian university lecturer Mahdi Esfandiari, who was arrested in France in February over her pro-Palestinian views. She was granted conditional release and is currently at the Iranian embassy in Paris. Two French citizens arrested in Iran on espionage charges in 2022 were also granted conditional release earlier this month and are now at France's embassy in Tehran. Iran's top security official Ali Larijani has wrapped up a two-day visit to Pakistan, marked by high-level talks on Gaza, regional tensions, border security, counter-terror operations, and economic ties, reflecting a renewed resolve by both nations to tackle shared regional challenges together. Our correspondent Nasser Cosby brings us more in this report.
Yet another busy day for Iran's top security official in Pakistan, marked by intense diplomatic engagements, strategic consultations, and rare interactions with both Pakistani and Iranian media. Speaking to reporters earlier on Wednesday, Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council Ali Larijani addressed the rapidly changing security landscape of the region. He noted that both Pakistan and Iran had played an important role in supporting the Palestinian cause, condemning the Israeli aggression and calling for an immediate halt to what he described as systematic oppression of civilians.
When it comes to defending the people of Palestine, Iran and Pakistan act in the same direction, each playing their part. Despite some troublemakers, we believe Pakistan can play a positive role in supporting regional stability and Palestinian rights.
Larijani also met religious scholars, clerics, and influential political figures of Pakistan. The discussion focused on interfaith harmony, sectarian unity, and the role of religious leadership in countering extremism across the region.
Our two-day visit provided an important opportunity to meet Pakistan's top leadership to discuss economic, security, and regional issues. We agreed to strengthen cooperation to counter terrorism and prevent destabilizing activities along our shared border. We explored ways to expand trade, including key goods, banking relations, and investments, with a goal of raising bilateral trade to $10 billion. Infrastructure projects like the Islamabad-Zahedan Railway Corridor and its link to the North-South Corridor were also discussed for mutual investment.
Pakistan's political leaders acknowledge Iran's important role in the region, stating that Iran has the right to develop its nuclear program for peaceful purposes.
Iran is a country which stood against the nuclear powers, you know. And I feel that it's the right of every nation to have a nuclear facility for peaceful purposes. And Iran has openly said that they have no intention for nuclear weapons. They want a nuclear for their peaceful purposes.
The visit's key moment came at General Headquarters, where Larijani met Pakistan's top military commander, Field Marshal Asim Munir, and senior security officials to discuss strengthening defense ties, enhancing cross-border security, coordinating counterterrorism efforts, and expanding intelligence cooperation.
With shared concerns over developments in West Asia and the wider region, Tehran and Islamabad appear committed to shaping a coordinated response that protects their national interest and supports regional stability. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iranians have marked Basij Day, celebrating the contributions of its members over the past four decades. The Basij popular movement was established by the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, with the vision to create a mission-strong army to protect the country. Mariam Ozacher has more.
In our literature, there's neither compromise nor submission. Iran will never abandon its religious values and scientific aspirations. These powerful verses were recited as part of an event commemorating the establishment anniversary of the Basij Popular Forces in Tehran. On this day in 1979, the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, called for the creation of a 20 million strong popular army to serve the country. The most recent example of this service was demonstrated by the Basij forces during the Israeli regime's acts of aggression against Iran just a few months ago.
The mission of our battalion has been providing perimeter security for several aerospace areas, and this mission is still ongoing.
The contributions of Basij members are vast and span across decades, playing a significant role both in times of war and periods of peace.
Fighting poverty is a core mission of the Basij. Over the past years, we have supplied clean drinking water to more than 2,000 villages and constructed approximately 17,000 homes for those in need.
I serve as the Basij commander at our school, where I help organize and lead various activities. These include holding media literacy classes, commemorating national and religious events, and public events outside of school.
The unwavering commitment of Basij members to serve stems not only from a deep love for their people and homeland, but also from their steadfast devotion to their religious values and leaders, whose teachings form the foundation of their very lives.
One of my most important responsibilities as a woman is to raise children who can contribute positively to the society in line with the guidance of our leader.
With such commitment in every aspect of life, they're confident in their ability to continue to overcome their enemies.
If, God forbid, the enemy makes another reckless move, even with all communication cut off, we are fully prepared to manage each district through a community system.
Because of its ability to resist, oppressive powers have always attacked the Basij movement, and yet this united front has continued to grow, over 25 million and counting.
A 20 million strong army, this was the vision of Imam Khomeini, the founder of Basij Popular Forces, and today thousands of his forces have gathered here to renew their pledge to continue to serve the nation on every front, from defending the country to contributing in fields such as education. Mariam Ozacher, Tehran.
Well, that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Bye for now.
Keeping the light alive.
we have to have a very fair assessment of this academic and intellectual icon of early Islam.
His impact is more pronounced in jurisprudence that he formalized.
And tens of thousands of statements and teachings have reached us from Al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today, we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the history of Islam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. The sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, was an incredibly prominent character in the history of the Muslims. He benefited humankind with his highly scientific achievements, many of which had never been seen before by humanity. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam's instructions in the acts of worship and transactions and his contribution in the field of legislation were amazing achievements that had not occurred before amongst the Muslim masses. And his eminence also had a positive and active share in the establishment of human culture and civilization. The sixth divinely appointed Imam, the son of Imam Baqir alayhi salam, an individual who was divinely appointed by the Almighty Allah, was known to have improved the general public lives of the people and the Muslims, and he was an individual, a divinely appointed Imam, a man from the household of the Holy Prophet, who enhanced human thoughts and discovered many of the secrets of this universe. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we are speaking about the dialogues of the sixth divinely appointed Imam. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon His Eminence, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. So, there's an interesting conversation or an interesting event that happens in the time of Mansur Dawaniqi, who was one of the Abbasid caliphs of the Abbasid Empire. And so we find that Al-Mansur, of course, was the Abbasid ruler, and at one time he summoned Abu Hanifa, who was one of the experts in the jurisprudential field of Islamic sciences. And so just before Al-Mansur summoned Abu Hanifa, he said to Abu Hanifa, "Abu Hanifa, people here are astonished by Ja'far ibn Muhammad. I therefore want you to prepare the most difficult questions you can to give to him." And so I guess a letter was sent to Abu Hanifa to do this. He says that I prepared 40 questions. Now, these aren't 40 simple questions, of course. You know, the Abu Hanifa being one of the experts of the field of jurisprudence, who also happens to be the founder of the Hanafi school of thought amongst the Ahl al-Sunnah brothers and sisters. When he's preparing 40 questions, to put forward to somebody who he himself knows is an expert, such as Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam, these are going to be incredibly difficult and hard and complex questions. And so Al-Mansur Dawaniki, you know, he invites Abu Hanifa. He says that when I went, I saw that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was sitting on the right side of Mansur. He says that as soon as I saw Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam, I was truly astounded by his dignity and his honor and his aura, even more so than the ruler who was sitting next to him. So I greeted Imam Sadiq, and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam pointed me to go and have a seat. And so then Mansur turns to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and says, Abu Abdullah, this is Abu Hanifa. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, yes, I know. And then Mansur turns to Abu Hanifa and says, Abu Hanifa, forward your questions to Abu Abdullah. And so Abu Hanifa says, I began asking and the questions, and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam would respond to the questions in the following manner. According to your view, the answer is, you know, so and so. And according to the view of the people of Medina, the answer is, you know, so and so. However, in my view, the answer is this and that. And so Abu Hanifa says that Imam Sadiq would either agree to what I would have said, or he would agree to the view of the people of Medina, or in some cases he would reject both views. And he did this with all 40 questions. And at this point, Abu Hanifa says, I have always said that the most knowledgeable of all people are the ones who are most acquainted with all of the different views of the people, and that I have not seen someone like Jafar ibn Muhammad, who knows and has this much knowledge. He is the most knowledgeable in the Muslim Ummah. This is Dialogue, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. IRIB English Radio, our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now let's listen to Sayyid Muhammad Jawad Al-Ghazwini.
I would like to share with you some beautiful words of wisdom from the Imam alayhi salam, because the words of the Imam illuminate the heart. They illuminate the spiritual heart. They give you yaqeen. They are very practical. There are some beautiful statements by Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. I would like to share them with you as we commemorate his legacy. In this beautiful incident, I would like to share with you the generosity of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Normally, we don't hear about the generosity of the Imam, but you know how generous the Imam was? Let's show the world out there, show your families this type of generosity. Once the Imam alayhi salam was in the masjid, he was praying the nawafil, the extra recommended prayers. A man comes, he was a traveler, someone from out of town. He comes to the masjid of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, and he also prays. After he finishes his salah, he realizes that his belt, which had money in it, because back then, what was the wallet that people carried? They had golden coins, silver coins. It was a belt. They'd wear a belt called himyan in Arabic, and they would put their money there. That was their wallet. He finished his salah. He realized his belt is not there. It's missing. He looked around. He didn't see anyone in the masjid except who? Ja'far ibn Muhammad alayhi salam. So immediately, what did the shaitan tell him to do? He accused the Imam. He came towards the Imam. He told him, look, there's nobody but you here, and I'm missing my belt. So you stole it from me. Put yourself in the shoes of the Imam. Someone comes to you, unjustly accuses you. The Imam alayhi salam told him, I did not take your belt. But let me ask you, let me end this dispute right now. How much was in your belt? He said 1,000 dirhams, 1,000 silver coins. Significant amount of money. With 10 silver coins, you could buy a sheep at the time. So it's a lot of money. You could buy 100 sheep with this money, just to give you an idea of its purchasing power. The Imam alayhi salam went, and he brought from his money 1,000
dirhams, and he gave it to him. He's like, here, take it. End of dispute. I don't want this to grow and for you to go out there and cause problems. And we're brothers at the end of the day. Look at the generosity of the imam. This guy goes home. When he reaches home, he realizes he had forgotten his belt at home, wherever he was staying. He finds his belt with his money. He feels ashamed. He comes back and he tells him, oh, Ja'far ibn Muhammad, I apologize. You're right. You did not steal my belt. I found my belt at home. Here, take your money. Take it back. The Imam alayhi salam says, we al-Muhammad, when we give something, we never take it back.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
Our researchers whose work quietly shapes the future of how machines see and understand the world. They bridge the gap between abstract algorithms and real-world applications, pushing boundaries in fields like deep learning, computer vision, and intelligent document processing. My guest today is one such innovator, an academic and practitioner whose contributions span both cutting-edge research and impactful industry collaborations. With a passion for pattern recognition and a commitment to advancing AI education, he continues to inspire the next generation of scientists and engineers. Welcome to SORP. I am Bahman Ray.
Yusri Kesentini is an associate professor at the Digital Research Center of ESFAX in Tunisia, where he leads the Deep Vision research team. With a PhD in pattern recognition from the University of Rouen, France, and an engineering degree from the National Engineering School of ESFAX, his work centers on deep learning, computer vision, and document image processing. He has authored over 60 publications and actively collaborates with industry on technology transfer projects.
Dr. Yusri Kesentini, very good to have you on this program.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm honored to be with you today. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure, actually, to have you here in Iran as well. What are some, if you are going to mention some key milestones or breakthroughs you have achieved in document image processing?
Yeah, I participate in many competition, international competition. For example, in my PhD, I have participated in a competition on Arabic handwriting, Arabic recognition, and I have I was ranked in top three, I think, with my system. Giving that participant is of high level. There is Google. There is some big company.
From the time that you were a student, or is it after you had come back to Tunisia?
No, this was in my PhD when I conduct my PhD. And now we continue to work, for example, in named entity information extraction from documents. So we have also participated in a challenge how to extract some information from records, marriage records, for example, historical marriage records. Yeah. And here there is a transcription stage, and we need to combine with NLP, natural language processing techniques, to understand the text and extract some named entity, like name of person, locations, dates. Here also we are ranked in top one in this competition. We have some interesting for document enhancement. Also, we compare our result using generative artificial intelligence. We have working with GAN, generative adversarial networks, diffusion models, and we have very good results that are compared to the best results in the world in these applications.
And have you ever, your research, has it ever involved AI and translation? Because that's also my field, and I want to know.
Yeah, we don't work on translation, but translation, I think, can be as a post-processing after the transcription. If we get the text, we can after use some NLP tools to transcribe the model to other the output, the text to other language.
So it would be a good idea to work on that together.
Yeah.
I'm trying to steal you and your expertise for my own studies. Very good. Yeah. And tell me something, how did you begin working with industry partners on technology transfer projects?
Yeah, this is the idea of our research center. When we create our research center, because before in Tunisia, most research laboratory work just to publish the result of their PhD in some conference, some journals. But we take a decision in our research center that we think that research must impact our socio-economical environment. And we start, this is a strategy that we have adopted, that we need to collaborate with companies to do this. And we started, in the beginning it was difficult because it is not common to collaborate between researcher and company. So the first project was difficult to convince the partner to work on with the researcher on this kind. But after, when they see the success of the project, and it become more easy. And now we have many projects with company, because we are now known that our Deserter Center work with high quality with company. So it is more easy to be involved in this kind of projects.
So you kind of provided the industry with the missing link, so that you kind of facilitated future research.
Exactly.
That's very interesting, Doctor. Yeah, very good. And, of course, it's a pleasure to have you here, because you were part of the, as I said, the sixth edition of Mostafa Prize. The scientists from all over the Islamic world get together every year. And that's a pleasure to have you as one of them here on SOAP, on our show.
Thank you.
Very good. Tell me something. What do you enjoy most about mentoring students?
Yeah. It's a good work, I think. I like it, because sometimes we have some students, some PhD students that come without any knowledge in artificial intelligence, in document images, and we need to coach them to have sometimes many skills to conduct their PhD. And our goal in the Digital Resource Center is not only to publish. It's the most important is not the quantity of how many publication, but the quality. So we try to publish in high quality conference and journals. So there is a ranking of conference and review. So most of our publication are in Q1 journals, ranked journals, A class conference, so we try to improve the quality, and this is amazing because you see how the PhD student improve his skills month after month, and for the supervisor is a great result also. When my PhD student come to his end of the PhD, it is a pleasure for me also because I see the results of works of how many years concretized in this day.
And it basically becomes part of your journey.
Yeah.
And of course, your research center has had so many collaborations with commercial applications. Can you name some of the most important, significant examples of those?
Yeah. In the Deep Field Vision team, we work on document image, but not only document image. So we work on different multimedia data. So we work on satellite images. This is in the context of smart agriculture. So we work on monitoring of olive tree in Tunisia, because Tunisia is very famous by olive tree. We have large crops of olive tree.
Black and green?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we are the third producer of oil, olive oil, in the world.
Wow.
In Tunisia. So we need to provide some artificial intelligence tools for monitoring these crops, for detect some disease, to control irrigation. So this is also part of our works. We work also on scene images in context of video surveillance, for example, how to detect persons, how to detect license plate in the vehicle, in Tunisian vehicle, and recognize them after. So we have many, many projects in these different application of images.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah.
They are, of course. And, of course, how has your role as an NVIDIA DLI instructor and an ambassador shaped your outreach efforts?
Yeah, I'm NVIDIA instructor and ambassador since 2018.
Okay.
To be instructor, there is many steps that you need to conduct with NVIDIA to be sure that you have the skills to be instructor. And as an instructor, I deliver many training sessions for student, for academic, for industrial, also in Tunisia. It is a training session, generally of today, on different topic of artificial intelligence. It is a certified training. So it means we use a platform of NVIDIA. All the work is in the cloud of NVIDIA. And the final step, there is an assessment that participant must conduct to get their certificate. So. This is the goal of
Right. Well, Dr. Yusri Kesantini, I wanted to continue the conversation, but I got the cue that we have to end because of time. Like to really thank you for being with us, but towards the end of the show you always get like a couple of minutes to talk directly to our audience, so for these 1 or 2 minutes our audience are going to become yours.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be with you in Iran. It is a very interesting opportunity to participate to the Mostafa Awards because we connect with Islamic researcher. It is very interesting, I think. I hope that I come back to Iran many, many other times.
Of course, we hope the same thing happens, and we'll see you back many times. Thank you so much for your time, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Rai.
good day to all of our listeners from around the world. This is Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Let's listen about Islam. The word Islam literally means peace and submission, meaning peace with humanity and submission to the edict of Allah. There are two concepts here: duty owed to God and rights owed to fellow human beings, regardless of race, religion, or color. Muslims are duty-bound to do good to others and sacrifice their own interests for the welfare of other people. There are many attributes of Allah mentioned in Islam. The two most common attributes used in the Holy Quran are the glorious and the merciful. According to Islam, Allah is ready to forgive and pardon people rather than being vengeful and quick to punish. The Islamic declaration of faith is simple and states, "There is none worthy of worship except Allah. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah." In fact, when someone becomes a Muslim, there is no elaborate ritual other than the acceptance of this belief and the recitation of this declaration of faith. It's the core in belief of all Muslims and is often written inside mosques as well as displayed as fine calligraphic art in the homes of Muslims. Thank you for joining us, and we are so glad to be with you in this part of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Israel Watch. The program critically analyses Zionist media reports about current events and issues in the West Asia region. They will be followed by Minbar. You can listen to speeches on many different subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. And we round up this hour's programs with Unscripted. The program provides analysis and commentary on some important and sensitive issues of the day, with emphasis on the West Asia region. Stay with us for the next hour.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Paris and on the path of the aggression against Gaza and Lebanon and on the concerns in the occupation entity over Hezbollah's possible response to the assassination of the senior commander Haytham Tabtabai. In addition to Trump's attempts to accelerate normalization between Saudi Arabia and the Israeli entity. These were among the topics highlighted in the comments of analysts in Hebrew media, and we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohammad.
Good morning.
The visit of Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi to Paris was a main point of interest in the Hebrew media, which viewed Iran as still politically and militarily strong, and that Araghchi's talks in France will come from a position of Iranian strength, not the opposite. Well, Dr. Mohammad, is the Iranian visit or the Iranian Foreign Minister's visit to France a bad sign to Israel?
It can be looked in two ways. Some Israelis consider that it is very important, and they consider that Iran is still strong. And the other, they say that when Araghchi goes to France and to the three Europeans, means that they are in a weak position. So this is what is going on in the media of Israel. But in reality, the French, British and the German, they are anxious of the growing power of Iran. And they know that when they had heard of Araghchi that we are still fine and we are, and our budget is three times tripled from before and so on. And they know that the Iran has escalated nuclear production, as well as their missiles and so on. And they are afraid also that these inventions or these military projects can be transferred or that can be given to Russia. And that's why they are afraid that this support to Russia would help in the war that's going on with Ukraine, okay, as well as this will threaten Europe. Mm-hmm. This is why they consider that we have to calm down. Although the three had ordered more sanctions on Iran, and they considered that by these sanctions, Iran would submit. But on the contrary, the sanctions did give a kind of morale to Iran, and they are going there.
But isn't that contradictory? Because you've highlighted that they are the ones, part of the countries that imposed sanctions on Iran, and now this visit as if giving a different impression.
Yeah, this is on one side. On the other side, they say that Iran is weak, the other analysis.
Okay.
But what we know is that they are afraid that Iran also would retaliate or would attack Israel, and that's why also they are afraid that...
Okay, and how would Israel view this, Dr. Mohammed? Israelis, it's a bad sign to them?
I said it. There are opposite opinions in Israel. Mm. Some consider that Israel, Iran is weak now.
Okay.
That's why it is going to Europe.
Okay, and some
the others say,
strong.
It is not. It is strong, and they are going...